So, folks, I'm here today in Fullerton in the workshop of Justin Farmer. And as far as I'm concerned, Justin is a legend in the Native American basketry and bow making circles. And I think I first heard of you, Justin, when I was in the Southwest Museum probably 15 years ago. And there's this huge, more than life size poster of you holding a bow. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So, I was on the Board of Trustees at that time. It was a local bull, hunting bull.
A local hunting bull that you found?
Yes. Well, no, I purchased it.
Oh, you purchased it. Okay, so I more recently picked up Justin's book, Basketry Plants Used by Western American Indians, and I was actually very pleasantly pleased because not only is it interesting to read and informative, I'm laughing as I'm reading it. I mean, it's a very conversational style.
Yeah.
So maybe we could start with... tell us about your background and how you got into this, and then we'll talk about your books.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm registered with the Bureau of Indian Affairs as a Mission Indian.
Mission Indian, okay.
And now,
Do they still use that term?
Yeah, because that's the legal term. We don't like to be called Mission because it implies that we're subject to the Mission. I've been known mostly as the Degueño.
Degueño, okay.
From San Diego County. And we don't like the name Degueño because it implies that we're children of the San Diego. So we call ourselves EPAI.
E-I-P, it's I-P-A-I.
Yes.
EPAI, okay.
EPAI. And this is part of the Pai family, and in our language, Pai simply means people.
Okay, and so this is, your people are originally from the San Diego area?
Yes, my grandmother was born at Sempa Squaw.
Okay.
But she was indentured, which means that she was purchased as an infant. I'm registered simply as a Mission Indian. And the purpose of indenturing was to stamp out any culture.
Your native culture.
Native culture.
Right.
And it was very effective. My grandmother hated Indians.
She hated Indians?
She was taught. That's what she was taught. That was the purpose of indenturing.
And she couldn't speak her own language, probably.
She couldn't speak the language.
Yeah.
In fact, she had about the only language she could speak was Spanish.
Okay.
She taught her 11 children to hate Indians.
Really?
And my
things
mother,
have changed a lot, haven't they?
Yeah, and my mother was one of those, and that's the way I was raised.
Yeah.
That it's not acceptable to be an Indian.
Well, you know, I mean, people did try to blend in, and my father was punished if he spoke Hungarian at home growing up.
Yeah.
But so things have changed. So your mother was taught that too. Then how did get into the
Well,
the
then I got into it. But of the five siblings in my family, I'm the only one who's registered.
Okay.
And I'm the only one who'll admit to be an Indian.
I see. The rest were embarrassed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's the way we were raised.
That's the way you're raised. I understand.
So until I reached middle age, I pushed that aside, but I always knew that I was going to capitalize on that somehow.
Why not?
So in about the early 1970s, I started collecting baskets because baskets are an art form, primarily an art form.
Mm-hmm.
They're utilitarian, but they're really an art form.
Right.
And I wanted to collect from the weaver. So I started
from the maker.
The maker,
mm-hmm.
Yes. So I started in about to Santa Barbara, and there were no Indian weavers left in Santa Barbara.
In the 70s. Wow, okay.
The next county south is Ventura.
Ventura, right.
There were none in Ventura.
Right, so that would be the Chumash people, probably.
Yeah. None in Los Angeles County.
None in Los Angeles
none
County.
In
wow.
Los Angeles.
None. That's truly a lost art.
Yeah, none in Orange County. None in San Bernardino County.
Wow.
None in Imperial
County.
There's
not many counties left.
That's right. So there was one elderly lady in Riverside County. She was a Kitchen, was her family name.
Kitchen, okay.
Kitchen. And there were three Indian ladies in San Diego County. And ironically, all three of them were cousins of mine.
Okay, interesting. They were your own cousins. Interesting.
Yeah. And so the oldest one was about the age of my mother. So she was in her late 70s at the time, or maybe 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I got her to get me started making them, and she didn't want to because I was a man.
I see. It was very much woman's work then.
Yes. Yeah. In her view, it was woman's work.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, boy, you know, a man weaver is better than no weaver at all.
Right.
So I asked her, why haven't you taught? Why haven't you brought this along? And I had commissioned her to make me a rattlesnake basket.
Do you mean with rattlesnake skins?
With a pattern.
Oh, the pattern. Okay, the pattern. Okay.
And she agreed to make one for $100. Okay. So when I was badgering her about learning, she says, it's going to take me 300 hours of to make that basket, and I'm going to charge you $100. She says, now you tell me why I should teach my niece how to weave baskets.
Well, economically, it doesn't make sense.
No. She says, I'm getting 30 cents an hour.
30 cents an hour. Wow. Okay.
So,
but some of the fine baskets get considerably more than that today, I would think.
Well, they are, yes.
Yeah.
But now the basket, when I picked it up, I gave her $150 for
okay.
it. And I sold the basket for $4,500.
Okay, that's quite a markup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, when I sold my big collection.
Right.
Okay. So, so I sat at her feet, and she walked me through this whole process.
Her 300 hours is probably including the gathering of the materials,
yeah.
though, too.
Yeah. Oh. Gathering and preparing the materials and so forth. So, so I kind of took it upon myself to give some classes, you know, to promulgate this thing.
So once you learned, you began teaching locally.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. And I've probably given 40 different classes.
And this is mostly in basketry?
In basketry.
Okay, and I noticed.
And in the Southern California style.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've been at 12 different universities.
Okay.
Either colleges or universities.
Okay. When you say the Southern California style, was there just one or several?
Oh, there are 500 styles.
Oh, 500. Okay. Very good.
Maybe not 500. 100 styles.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there's 100 different languages spoken in California alone.
Right.
So, so I learned my style, which is the Southern California mission style. And that's what I've been teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still doing that.
Right. And before we get too far along, how do people reach you for your books or for classes?
Well, word of mouth.
Okay. Let's be more specific. Is there a phone number or an address people can contact you?
Well, apparently on Google. And
okay.
Because I don't use the Internet, I can't speak the language. But
if they Google Justin, just like it sounds,
yeah.
Farmer, they'll find you.
Yeah.
Okay, and they could always contact me also.
Right.
I'll put people in touch with you.
I'm a member of virtually every museum in Southern California.
He's widely known, folks.
Yes.
Okay.
The sound of risk of sounding egotistical. Yes, I.
You are widely known. Yeah.
Well,
I was telling Mark on the way down here, you may not realize it, but you're already a legend.
Well, that's flattering.
Yeah, yeah.
But see, when I started with this whole learning process, there were three women left. In all of Southern California, what, 20 million people, and there are three.
It is, it is hard to believe, but the economics of it is understandable.
Yeah. So now there's probably 100 in Southern California. And I'm on the board of directors of a statewide organization called California Indian Basket Makers Association.
They put out a magazine, don't they?
Yeah, a periodical.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a gathering yearly. And
where is the gathering? Does it vary?
It's a gathering of all Indian people in California.
Uh-huh.
And it's coming up the 25th of this month.
Of June 2014.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And there'll be 700 people there.
I see.
In California.
I see.
And so that you can see what's happened in the last 40 years.
It's really blossomed then.
Yeah.
I mean, you would clearly say that the whole art and practice is in a revival, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's and it's gone through Renaissance periods. It died out in the late 1800s because of the slavery. Then it picked up in the early 1900s until the Great Depression. And then it went in the dive again. And now it's back up again, and it's bottomed out, and it's climbing. So
you learned from one woman, and then you gradually taught others and just expanded your knowledge from there.
Yeah. But I've looked at 10,000 mission baskets, some detail.
Where does one go to look at baskets today if they wish to do so?
Well, the Southwest Museum has 14,000 baskets in their collection.
Mm-hmm.
And if you
there used to be a basketry room. I don't know if there still is.
Well, the catacombs is full of baskets.
Mm-hmm.
It's now closed up pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
But San Diego Museum of Man has a real nice collection.
Okay.
Partner all of the museums will have baskets, and you can. If you make, go to them with hat in hand and
uh-huh.
bend a knee, they'll let you look at them.
Okay.
And I've had several collections. I just sold a collection at them.
And I noticed, Justin, that you have you've shown me four books that you've written. What was the first book that you wrote on the subject?
Well, the first book I wrote was called Southern California Lucenio Indian Baskets.
Okay.
And
looks like a beautiful coffee table book.
Yeah, and it was done in 2004 because the U.S. Postal Service had adopted a pane of 10 stamps to commemorate the building of the museum in Washington, D.C.
I remember those stamps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and one of those was the stamps was of a basket, a Lucenio basket.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the museum at Riverside Municipal Museum.
So your subtitle is a study of 76 Lucenio baskets in the Riverside Municipal Museum collection. Okay.
Right.
So you're talking about how they made it and who made it and all of that.
Well, that's what this was about.
That book, yes.
Because the Postal Service had come out with a stamp, and because the curator there was a personal friend of mine, and he was the one who was responsible for getting the Postal Service to adopt it, then he died.
I see.
So this is kind of a in his honor.
I see. The book is in his honor. Good, good.
And
what came next after Southern California Lucenio Indian Baskets?
The next one was this one.
The one that I've been reading, Basketry
Plants.
Basketry Plants
used by Western American Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for doing that was to show what a plant looks like after it's been 100 years in a basket.
Right.
In other words, what does it look like when it's growing? How do you prepare it? What does it look like when you're preparing? How do you size it and so forth? And then what does it look like after it gets into a basket?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a textbook so that collectors or students can look at a basket and identify the basket based on the materials that are in it.
Mm-hmm. And you were just showing me the chart in the back indicating that certain tribes used certain materials, so you can, if you know what tribe it came from, it's very likely one or two of these materials,
yes,
and vice versa.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you pick up a basket and you see devil's claw, if you go to the chart and look down devil's claw, It'll tell you those tribes in the western United States that use double clock.
I see. How long did it take you to write the basketry plants book?
4 or 5 years.
So it took you 40 years to write it in 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
If you catch my drift. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, you, I was pretty careful because once you write something and you publish it,
it's out there.
It becomes, yeah. Is Allah, it is written.
That's right. I gotcha.
So I'm very careful. I think I consider myself to be a traditionalist to a fault.
Okay.
And I mentioned there's things like big leaf maple. What does it look like? And
I see.
Creek dog.
So a lot of the people who are collectors or sellers don't even know what the plant looks like.
They don't know what it looks like.
Yeah.
So this was hopefully for their benefit.
Okay, good. And then what came after basketry plants?
Okay, then after that, this is a book. It's called Creating an Indian Style Coiled Basket.
And for those of you who don't know, coiled baskets are entirely different, right? It's just a big spiral coil.
Yes. As contrasted with plaiting or twining.
Mm-hmm.
It's a coil, and it's more of a stitching. You have a coil of a foundation, and you stitch it to the coil underneath it.
I have one that took me, when I was learning how to do it, 60 hours out of pine needles, and somebody looked at it once and said, I like that basket, I'll give you a crisp $5 bill for it.
Yep.
So I just smiled.
Yeah. And
that was less than 30 cents an hour.
Speaking of pine needles, there were only a very pitifully few Indian people in California that ever used pine needles.
Okay.
If you see a basket with pine needles in it, 99.5 times out of 100, it'll be made by a white guy.
I see. Okay. I thought it was done for the tourists, maybe, the pine needle baskets.
Well, they're brittle.
That's right. It never struck me as a good material for making baskets.
It isn't.
Yeah.
It isn't. And there was only about 3 families in all of California that traditionally, Indian families, that made pine needle baskets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of them was the Osuna family, and my grandmother was an Osuna. So
okay.
She's part of that Osuna family.
Okay.
And the woman I learned basketry from, Christina Osuna, she made them. She's the one that got me making them.
That's Osuna, Osuna?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And Grandma Osuna was her mother. Now, Grandma Osuna was not my maternal grandmother. In Indian culture, many elderly people are grandmothers.
Right, correct. Yeah.
So Grandma Osuna made several baskets for our family, but I could never possess them until I reached about 40 years old because of this dislike for Indians.
Right. So like you've branched into cradles, the baby cradles.
Yeah, well, see,
this
cradles...
Is,
okay,
and the last book, this is your fourth book?
Yes. This is called Indian Cradles of California and the Western Great Basin. Cradles are generally a form of basketry. Now, they're not, they vary quite widely, but here I just...
In other words, many of the techniques used for making a basket you're employing to make your cradle.
Yes. Yes.
And as we sit here, they're hanging from the rafters. There's all these different styles hanging above our heads here.
Yeah, this is only about a quarter of them.
Okay.
And again, Indian cradles or cradle boards or cradle baskets are very poorly represented in the literature.
I didn't realize it was that big. So all of the mothers generally carried their children in the cradle on the back.
Pretty near all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And indeed, they're going.
I think we should bring that back.
Well,
look at the children in the post office and the supermarket.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, keep them from running around.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But many of these are fairly old, and there are many of the tribes that the cradles are represented by hiatus.
Okay.
In other words, in San Diego, Southern California, there's a cradle right above you, That was fairly common in San Diego County.
And it looks like a ladder that would be strapped to the back, and then you'd strap the baby onto that.
Right. Yeah. I have never found a another style from San Diego County that was used by an Indian. They're gone.
I see.
And I think the reason for that is that after the child outgrew the cradle, it was discarded.
They'd make a new one if they had a new baby.
Yeah.
I see.
And many of them were hung in a tree and let the nature, back to nature.
I see, yeah. So that's why it's hard to find a lot of this.
Yeah. So that's the fourth book. Now, I've written several others, one on Chinig Chinish, which is...
Spell that.
C-H-I-N-I-G-I-N-I-C-H.
Okay, and it means?
Chinig Chinish was an early religion. It was a religion that was an Indian religion from the Los Angeles Basin. And Chinig Chinish was one of the names of the deity.
Okay.
And it was a religion that was very prominent when the missionaries got here.
Okay.
And it was written on by Father Boscana, Geronimo Boscana, at San Juan Capistrano. And he is about the only person that...
So the name was Boscana. Justin just handed me the book that it was based upon, C-H-I-N-I-G-C-H-I-N-I-C-H. And then, Justin, you wrote... what is this that you wrote?
This is kind of a reader's digest of the various translations. See, Boscana wrote this in the 1700s. 1820s.
Looks like he died 1831.
Yeah. And, of course, he was from Mallorca, so his Spanish is kind of an antique Spanish. So there have been a number of people who have translated his work into English.
Okay.
He apparently wrote three different versions of this book.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I tried to go through all three of those
to capture like his intent, right?
Well, yeah. Because they were different. See,
right.
the origin of humans, for example, was different in each of his three versions of Boscana's work.
And you notice, I'm just glancing at some of your highlights in your book. This says an early pre-contact Southern California Indian religion. There are a lot of Christian parallels as well, like there would be in any religion, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now Boscana, I think, was about the only Catholic missionary who ever took the time to study the local religion.
To his credit.
To his credit.
Yeah.
The rest of them, and he wasn't above bad-mouthing them.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't speak well of any of his Indian charges, but at least he wrote it down.
Right, right.
And he's the only one that in history that's ever written anything about Boscana, about Chinig Chinish.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's as interesting. So if people want to get a copy of,
how
do they get this?
I don't have very many copies of this.
Okay.
So
they have to get a bootleg copy somehow.
Yeah. All right.
Well, it's very interesting. It looks like it's about 60 pages or so.
Yes.
It covers the way of life. Now, we've got a few more minutes left on this segment, but you're heavily involved with archery or bows as well. I always see pictures of you with bows.
Well, at one time, yes. I used the longbow.
The longbow, right.
And I've made bows. And some of those bows I got from in Baja California, from the Pai people.
Okay.
That's just one of, I know how to flint nap and make arrows and I make throwing.
All of the old skills. Well, you do throwing sticks too.
Yeah. I probably made 50 throwing sticks.
Yeah.
And also.
Did Paul Campbell learn from you?
No, I think I'll learn from him.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul is brilliant.
Paul Campbell, he's author of Survival Skills of Native California. Justin has a beautiful hard copy of his book on his desk here.
Yeah. Paul is a student of students.
Right.
He's probably a brilliant. I have the highest regard for the man because he doesn't take 2 times 2 equals 4.
Yeah, you've got that right.
The one he did on pigments, he and I did a lot of work with pigments, mm-hmm. and he wrote a whole book on why blue is blue, for example.
Yeah, Justin is talking about Earth Pigments and Paint of the California Indians by Paul Campbell.
So
quite a book.
And he and I have been pretty close friends for a long time. I've kind of lost track of him a little bit, but So I've gotten involved in a lot of things.
A lot of the old skills. And fire making, do you ever teach that in your classes, the old style?
I know how, and I've attended classes, and I took my grandson to show him how. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, my great-grandson.
If you look at some of these survival shows, they all fail at fire, but you'd think that that's all there is about the old skills, is making fire. But there's so many things that isn't funny.
Yeah. Well, they lived, you know, and you think of all the things that we do in our culture today that they did, except they didn't have a Woolworth sword.
That's right. No stores to go to. You had to make everything from scratch.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, if people want to reach you, Justin, they could contact me or just go Google.
You can put my name in, Jeff. My address and phone number.
Okay. So why don't you tell us what it is?
Okay. It's Justin Farmer. And it's actually the Justin Farmer Foundation, and the address is 1954 Evergreen Avenue in Fullerton, 92835.
And that's Fullerton, California, folks, if you're listening from New York.
Yes.
Which I hope you are.
And the phone number is area code 714-256-1260.
Okay. And have members of your family come around to your way of trying to revitalize the old skills and the old ways?
No, I'm the only Indian in the whole family.
Is that right? That,
of the 5 siblings, I'm the only one that will even admit to being Indian.
I mean, do they at least recognize what you're doing has great value in bringing back the old ways?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most of them are very proud of the fact that we have a family reunion every year.
Yeah.
And they're very proud of the fact that I'm doing it, except, and many of them would like to become registered because they think they're going to get on a casino payroll of some sort.
Oh, I see. Okay. not because it's they want to recognize their roots, but because they might get some cash.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of cash to be made by having a casino. I know that.
Yeah. And I have never gotten a penny. In fact, I went to college and I never went through the GI Bill because I didn't feel anyone owed me that.
Does your tribe, both tribal people, have a casino down in San Diego?
Yes.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. Well, Santa Isabel, mm-hmm. and there's a number of them in San Diego. Mm-hmm. So
when the bill came up for a vote, I voted against it because I think the gambling is just it's bad in general.
Yeah.
And brings bad energy into the tribes. But the money they liked, you know, the money helps things happen, I know.
Well, there were bad things going on in the reservation as it was.
Anyway, right.
And I don't think anyone can say that it's gotten worse. It's just that some of the people who are having a hard time getting one meal a day now are eating 3 meals a day.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And
I hear so many rumors about all the fabulous fortunes that are being accrued. Taint so. Pechanga, for example, when they built their casino, they had to provide fire and police protection for virtually the entire part of the county.
I see. So it's not a panacea by a long shot.
It certainly isn't.
Yeah.
And the fellow, the chairman of my foundation, is a member at Pechanga, and he's one of the department heads there. He drives about a 7-year-old SUV. And
it's more recent than my car.
And he lives in an old mobile home on the reservation.
I don't live in a mobile home anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And the road isn't even paved in front of his house. Yeah. But he does spend money on basket collecting.
Mm-hmm.
But the rumors are not always true about.
As always.
Yeah.
Look, it's too short of a conversation, but I hope everybody enjoys getting to know a little bit about Justin Farmer, and hopefully we'll do this again, Justin.
Yeah. Well, I'm very honored to be asked to do this.
All right. Thanks again.
Okay.